children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, you're about to hear from Rahama Bistritsky Clapman, who runs MASS, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. They're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters. And if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rahama Bistritsky Clapman here on Deb Brenner's Talkline Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rahama and Family Matters.
Welcome back to Family Matters, MASC weekly radio show. MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. Our phone number is 718-758-0400. Anybody that wants to get a training and a free naloxone kit, Narcan, should call MASC. We will tell you how to get that kit and training free for somebody that you can save a life. Opiate overdoses are happening in our from community. Over 90 young adults were NIFTA this year since January 1st. We have to help these kids, these young adults, these married people that are struggling with drugs. Please call for a Narcan kit for your shul, for your family member, for a friend. Call 718-758-0400. And we have on tonight, we are so happy to have with us Sonny Perlman, Clinical Director of Our Place. Welcome, Sonny.
Thank you very much for having me, Rahama.
Sonny, it's always wonderful to speak with you, and you have been the last 20 years since MASC began 20 years ago. We've been in touch with Our Place, working with the parents, doing programs in the community, always together. It's always wonderful to speak with you and do things with you. Sonny, I want to tell our listeners what Our Place is, if you can please let them know.
Okay, Our Place is a drop-in. Well, there's four different centers in Our Place. Been open for 20 years, and the girls open soon afterwards. So there's a boys' center and girls' center, and I can explain what a drop-in center is. And then we've opened the living room, where there's now a living room in Brooklyn and as well Muncie as well. The living room was in response, been open for about 15 years as a response to after rehab. There was never a way to catch these guys and bring them back to the community and help them through the Jewish community. So the living room is a sober clubhouse for Jewish men and women, young men and women who want to continue their recovery, and that program has grown to be pretty massive as well. The drop-in centers are open every night, and we have young men in the men's center, and the girls' center. We have young women who come down nightly. They get fresh food. They meet counselors. They meet therapists. We have a concept that we call whole life therapy, which is we look for everything they need, and we try to figure out how to make it work. If they need a job, if they need to get back into school or college, or go to rehab, or anything you can think of, we've done it. Can't figure out how to do it, we figure out how to do it. So that's how Our Place works. We work with every organization out there because we can't provide all the services that are necessary, but there's a lot of amazing organizations like MASC ask that for the services that we don't provide. So we consider ourselves like the hub of the wheel, where we're sending everybody to where they need to go. And Baruch Hashem, it's been a wonderful success, and it's a pleasure to work there. So that's the basic rundown.
So, Sonny, I remember when we started Mass, Chaim Glantz started the Drachten Center with Meish Binnick. Do you want to go back and talk about 20 years ago a little bit and Meish Binnick?
Yeah, I mean, it's been quite a journey. I actually came into our place later. I don't know if you remember when I started, I was working with Priority One, and that's the first time we met. That was about 20 years ago. At the same time, Chaim Glantz and a couple other people in the community who were working individually with a bunch of guys realized that there was an issue, and they had the perfect partnership with Meish Binnick, who at first didn't believe that it even existed, the issue in the community. I mean, this is really early. People really didn't know. And he was convinced that there was an issue, and he went full in to sponsor it and make this center. Now, in the beginning, it started out with just let's get these kids off the street, and then we'll figure it out from there. And it was there was no professional staff at that point. It was all lay leaders and volunteers that all just wanted to help these kids. And it was more of a fear of the street that started it. After a couple of years in, they realized that there was a lot of issues that they didn't know how to deal with, therapeutic issues and placement issues and identifying issues. So they started bringing in some professional staff. And that's where our place became was what I would like to call is like a hybrid professional and volunteer and lay leader volunteer mix. So if you come into the center, talk specifically about the guy center, you don't have that feeling of professionalism. Like if you feel like it's a hangout, the guys, you know, could work out or play pool or watch a game or hang out with some mentors. But in the background, there are all the offices and the therapy. So it's the mix between the professional and the just supportive mentoring.
So it's interesting. You started off saying that Meish Binnick didn't think it was a real problem out there. Sonny, I don't know if you know this, but I called Meish Binnick more than 20 years ago, and I said, Meish, there's a problem on the streets. We need a place. I need your help. And I knew that there was a place near his store available, and I wanted him to get involved. And he says, Ruchama, I don't have time for this. I don't know what you're talking about. I got to go. And I hung up. And very shortly after that, Chaim Glantz had reached out and took him out and showed him on Avenue M. So believe me, when you say he didn't believe there was an issue, no, he really didn't when I called him. He couldn't believe it. And when he met me the next time, he says, Ruchama, I apologize. I had no idea what you were talking about. So first of all,
There's a funny story where Chaim was telling Meish about it on the street. That there's an issue, and Meish is like, there's no issue, it's not a big deal. And then Chaim saw a group of guys, Jewish kids, who were looking very not Jewish and looking like they weren't living the Jewish lifestyle, across the street. And he said, well, what about those kids? And Meish said, those aren't Jewish kids, those are just kids from the neighborhood. And he said, really? And he walked Meish across the street and introduced them to all the kids. You know, Chaim and Yossi and Meishi and, you know, and that's really what did it.
Yeah,
that was the story that did it.
It's crazy, crazy story. Right. But Yashikoach, what a schus to be able to do the work you do directly with these young adults, all ages actually, and preteen as well. Let's talk about the ages that you're dealing with now in the Drachten Center.
So that has also changed over the years. What hasn't changed is the age that we're willing to accept openly into the center. The official age of coming into the center is 15. There are several kids that we do let in under 15. Under that, we really try to just get them back into school, get them the right therapy, but not have them come into the center. Sometimes it's such a severe case that they need the center, but under that age. So the ages of the guys, everybody says it's getting younger. I don't think it's getting so much younger. I'm not so convinced. You definitely believe it's getting younger.
Well, we get the calls on the helpline.
Right.
Sure is. We get the calls from the parents, from the yeshivas.
No, but I'm saying for the last, in 20 years ago, I was getting those calls as well. I'm saying, like, it's always, we always had issues with Rich Younger. I just felt like no one believed us.
I think the kids were not as much on the street then, but they were acting out. Today, younger kids are on the street. I mean, eighth graders are out of school, on the streets with issues.
Right. Okay. No, I feel like it's been like that the whole time. It could be that it's gotten worse. Unfortunately, that's one of the issues. We don't have a lot of data. I've been taking a lot of data from our place. Thank God we have a lot of, we've been getting a lot of data, and we're doing some very interesting research studies with it. But there's not a lot of data from the larger community to know what the numbers are. But they, I mean, I could tell you in our place we get between 400 and 700 kids in the center a year. That's just the guy's center.
What are your hours?
So we're open every night from 7 to 11 at night. Those are the open hours. We also do other programming that happens at different times, but that's when it's open for all the guys to come. And we're open 5 nights a week, and sometimes in the winter we open 6 nights a week.
And I've been there. It's just amazing. Just really the food, the smell, walking in, so inviting, and the atmosphere, and the volunteers are so dedicated. And the volunteers are in touch with these young adults during the year, during the day, during an emergency, during a crisis. It's not just the drop-in center, is that?
100%. I mean, the whole center is based on a mentorship model where we believe nobody gets better without a relationship. I get phone calls from people all the time, and I say, who's connected to this guy? Or girl, who they connected to. If they're not connected to anybody, it is 100 times harder to help this kid. With us in the center, we're connected that those mentors and volunteers connect with these kids is phenomenal. That's really what makes the difference. After they have the relationship, these guys ask for help. That's how they get the help. We're not forcing them to help. When you have a relationship with someone who believes in you, you want help. You want to get better.
Absolutely.
So that's how it works.
Right.
And we have phenomenal volunteers.
I'm sorry. We have on with us Sonny Perlman, LCSW, Clinical Director of Our Place, the Drop-In Center for Young Adults in Flatbush, in Midwoods, on Avenue M. Anyone interested in reaching Sonny, feel free to call 718-758-0400, and we will give you his contact information. Anyone interested in somebody reaching out to maybe a loved one of yours, somebody on the street, somebody you know that could belong at our place, please call MASK 718-758-0400, and they have volunteers that work on the streets with these young adults. Sonny, we had on with us a few weeks ago Menachem Poznanski from the Living Room, and he spoke all about the Living Room. We'd like to hear more about the Girls' Place. Does it work the same way? What nights is it open, and what age girls are invited?
I can't speak so much about that only because I don't work in the Girls' Place. You'd have to speak to people who run the Girls' Place, but it's very similar to the Guys' Place. It's similar ages, similar nights. I would say most of the things we're doing at the Boys' Place are done on some level in the Girls' Place as well.
Okay, and I hope to have somebody on in the future to discuss the girl's place. I'd like to talk about the 12 steps. If you could explain to our listeners, what is the 12 steps and is it used at all in your work with these young adults?
So the 12 steps is the program, the living room, which is much more, okay, so let me break it down. Our place is not for addiction only. It's for any kid who's struggling. We do have one or two 12-step meetings in our place, but all the people that are really doing the 12 steps that are actively working in recovery are in the living room. So our place does not, obviously, we use the 12 steps in the therapy we do there and in some of the meetings, but the 12 steps is not the focus of our place. We're doing more mentorship model, strength perspective, and that's how we're focusing our strengths. If someone needs the 12 steps, we transfer them over to the living room and get them the help they need in that way. So
right.
I wouldn't say that our place itself is a 12-step program, but we, like every other methodology of helping people, we utilize the 12 steps a lot.
I see. And you have therapists there, and you can refer out to therapists, psychiatrists, social workers, therapists, rehabs, whatever else they may need, if they do need, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's most of the work we're doing.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that changed over the years, and that's amazing, really amazing. Right. Can we talk about what is the trend? What are you seeing with the 15, 16, 17-year-old kids today that's different that you've seen over the last 20 years, if anything?
That's a great question. It definitely helps my organization to be panicking. But I could say, at least for Brooklyn, and when I'm looking at other communities, it is I could see the difference. In Brooklyn, I believe the issue has gotten better. I see that the schools have much more tolerance for dealing with kids that are struggling. Everybody likes to say the yeshivas keep kicking people out, but it's not so true. Most yeshivas are working with the people in the schools. I really see that. The parents are much more tolerant.
I agree with you. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we must commend them. I agree with you. People like to assume and say negative about our yeshivas. It is not so anymore. The yeshivas are on board. They're helping these kids. They're reaching outside the school for help. I agree. They are not kicking out kids like they were during the last many years. So I just needed to get that in. Thank you.
Right. I definitely believe that to be true. I also see parents changing, and that has probably a lot to do with masks. Parents are much more tolerant. It used to be a kid was doing one thing bad, and instead of seeing it as an issue, like this kid is struggling, we need to help them, immediately it went to like kicking them out of the house. And I see this happening in other communities, and people were sent to rehab at 14, 15 years old because they're smoking marijuana. I mean, it was such a reaction that was so strong that it was actually pushing these kids in the wrong direction. So our place right now, what we're seeing is a different group of kids than what we used to see. What we used to see is the numbers were so big because we were getting every kid who ever smoked a little bit of marijuana or drank a little bit too much on Shabbos, they were immediately thrown out of school and thrown out of class and thrown out of their homes. So we were getting kids that were really, really good kids, and they just need a little bit of intervention. They would have been fine. Now we're not seeing those kids. We're just seeing the very difficult cases where people are dealing with abuse and neglect, and obviously now everybody is seeing the sexual abuse as like people haven't seen it before, but we've been seeing it since the beginning. We have a lot of cases of people dealing with molestation and all different forms of abuse and neglect. So what we're seeing on the street now is not the same numbers. We're seeing much, much more powerful issues But the kids that are like in the beginning stage are doing really well. So I look at other communities. I don't want to point to other communities, but some of the communities that are just starting out on this journey that we've done for the last 20 years, I see them doing the same struggles, sending everybody to rehab, sending everybody away the second they make any mistakes. The school is still kicking them out. It's not happening in Brooklyn. I, to me, that's one of my greatest prides. You mentioned in the beginning of the show, 90 people died. From our place, really hasn't been a lot of deaths in the last couple of years. There were a couple, but you would expect a tremendous amount, larger numbers. These kids are getting help. I believe we could stop all these deaths just by connecting to them and getting them the help they need to get. The kids that are dying, or the young adults that are dying, are generally not people that are being helped. So,
right. And they're not mass parents, children either. When I said right. over 90 kids for NIPTA this year, it's from opiate overdose, like you said, that either came out of drug rehab, did not go to a step down. Can we talk about a step down? You know, people go to rehab and they come home after 30, 60, 90 or a year, whatever it is there, you know, how long that their recovery in the rehab is, but they need to go to a step down, not just coming home. And I also want to address that parents, when their children or married children, any age, go into rehab, parents must come to groups, go to a therapist, an addiction professional, to learn what your child is going through, to learn it the same way that they're learning inpatient, so that when they come out, at least whatever needs to be adjusted at home or fixed or relationship, etc., it is helpful for that family member to prevent a percentage of prevention of relapse. Can we talk about relapse and sober living, please?
Okay, so I mean, I would say that that's the biggest, that is, if I would say that the biggest issue is that there's a lack of sober living, so you pointed that out. There's not a lack of rehabs that I could tell, and there's a lot of rehabs out there, and some of them are really good. And rehab, but what people don't realize about rehab is it's literally just the beginning of recovery. Addiction is not an issue that it could be fixed with antibiotics. You know, you give 30 days of treatment and then they're better. Addiction, you literally have to change your entire personality. A personality of someone who's an addict is someone who cannot handle difficulty, and they need to use something to make themselves feel all right. You have to train that person, and they have to train themselves to learn how to deal with every difficult situation in life. It is almost like starting life over, and the thought that you could do that in 30 days or even 90 days is in my opinion ludicrous. So I'm what you need, and what I've seen in the last 2.5 years, I ran a sober living in Muncie, and unfortunately we had to close down because the owner passed away. But what I've seen from that is that these guys came out of rehab, and normal statistics would say that the best rehabs would have 20% success rate. Coming out of this sober living, I know just for this last 2.5 years, 73% of the guys that came out of my program are sober today, living sober lives. And all they did was spend a couple of months really settling in and being sober and learning how to be sober in the community that they're going to end up in. So without that process, they wouldn't have had that. And every person who actually finished the program that I was running is sober today. It's not rocket science to get better, but it takes a lot of work, and you need the support. And just sending people to rehab, people think is the answer to this issue. It's not. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the numbers of all the people that have died from opiate overdoses, you're going to see that most of them, I would say 95% of them, have been to rehab at one point. So it's not the solution, it's the beginning of a solution. So I once made a joke to a rehab that that they're killing people because everybody who's been to everybody who dies is went to rehab. So that's your, but it's obviously a joke. But you need to follow up, and other communities in the secular community, they have these sober livings. In the Jewish community, they don't have them, and hopefully we'll be building a whole bunch of them so that they can learn how to be sober when they come out.
Absolutely. Very, very, very important piece that somebody that's not educated in this area doesn't realize, because parents call the Mask Helpline and they say, we paid so much money, $30,000, $20,000, $40,000, and more, to get their child the help they need in rehab. And now what? Their husband is complaining, it's so much money, and it's endless. Now he came out, now he has to go back in, or she, and they relapse. So it's very important to step down. We cannot think, if you're putting your child into a rehab, we must tell parents, do not pick a rehab on your own. You must get your child assessed by an addiction professional. Don't go where your next door neighbor's kid went. Don't go where your relative went, because every child has to be assessed, every person, up to where they're at mentally, if they need a microprogram, a regular. These are different areas that need to be assessed by an addiction professional before they get admitted, so that you get a clear picture of what you're working with, what you're dealing with, and which rehab best benefits. And like you said, Sonny, there are some wonderful rehabs out there that are working, many with the FRUM community, with kosher, offering kosher, with Chabad rabbis going in, because many of them are out of town, and they're working with the drop-in center closely so that they get in and they come out and they have a continued relationship.
Right.
Sonny,
I would like to make, can I make one more comment on that? Just, I would say, I send somewhere between 40 to, myself personally, I'm not even talking about our place as a center, but I send personally around 40 to 50 people to rehab a year. I would say this comment, and that is, I would rather, if someone has a limited amount of money, I'd rather they go to a, not to a, to a cheap rehab and a good sober living than to go to an expensive rehab and not have any more money for sober living. Sober living teaches you how to live as a sober person in your community. These kids are coming back, and adults are coming back, and they're going back into the exact same situation that they left, and they do not know how to cope. And without a good sober living or a good way to get yourself back into the community in a healthy way, all that money you spent on rehab is wasted. So that's what I would say.
Thank you for that. Sonny, it's wonderful having you on, and I hope to have you on again. And we have Sonny Perlman, clinical director of Our Place. Anybody wants to reach Sonny, or if somebody knows a neighbor, someone you're sitting next to in shul, a relative, call MASK 718-758-0400 to reach Sonny or to get a referral for your loved one. Thank you, Sonny. Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you, Rechama.
Thank you.
Good Shabbos.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, Rechama Bistritsky-Klapman, who runs MASK, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids, they're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters. And if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rechama Bistritsky-Klapman here on Dev Brenner's Talkline Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rechama and Family Matters.